everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, raring to go with my buddy on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. It is Thursday, August 19th, 2021, and 24 hours ago, Tom, I was saying, I think we're into our first break of the monsoon. The summer.
How prophetic you were.
But.
And are.
Guess what? It rained again yesterday afternoon. You know, I'm not complaining. We definitely need the rain, and we're now pushing at our place 17 inches of rain up in the lower foothills area, which is really
They're
good.
Predicting sunny skies today through Sunday.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but see, it's a trade-off because it warms up.
When we have sun, it does. But you know what? It may be a little cooler at night. Might be a little better sleeping time, sleeping weather.
Change of seasons coming up. The Buckmaster Show, we are in our 11th year, believe it or not, here on the radio. Started in January of 2011. And now we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We're delighted that they have the naming rights here at 10:30. Tucson's voice for Trusted News Talk, the naming rights during the Buckmaster Show anyway. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. You can live stream it that way or at kvoi.com. The live line, when we do our live line interviews, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we will not be doing any live line interviews today. We will be doing in-studio interviews, and Anna Oliveras is with us. Anna is the director of Pima County Transportation Department. Anna, good to see you again.
Thank you, Bill. It's good to see you, too. Thank you for inviting me.
What a summer we are having, and of course, we do welcome the rain, but there have been all sorts of issues with our roads, haven't there?
There are, and I echo what you said. We welcome the rain. There's a lot of weeds, and it looks pretty. Everything's green. But there has been rain comes, and it goes all over the roads. And I do want to say, and I want to thank everybody for their patience as we try and clean up all the messes that have recreated with the rain. Usually it floods the roads, the water's running, nobody can get through. We need to close those off. And then after the water finally runs through, we still need to clean up the debris that has accumulated on there. So we're doing our best to get to all of them as quickly as possible, as you said, before the next round of rain comes down.
Yeah, up on our area there, on River, I see occasionally when things sort of settle down, the county brings out what do you call it? The grader?
The loader to clean up?
Yeah, the loader to try to clean up. But it must be quite a monumental undertaking to try to get to all of these areas in a timely fashion.
There is. So we try to get to the ones that have the most traffic, of course, to make the biggest impact to get those cleared out. So some of the roads that have the lower, smaller amount of traffic, they fall and the lower priority in. But we try to get to them. And the other thing that we do is if there is rain scheduled for days after the other, we won't get out there, you know, one day to clean up and then come back. We'll kind of wait till there's a little lull and get
like
them out
there. Like what's going to be happening here in the next 5 days.
Right.
This is going to be a busy time.
Right, right.
For the greater people.
They are.
So your team has had your hands full, obviously, this summer. I noticed that, and I guess you're the engineer here, but when you have like a pothole or something and then you have all of this rain, it's not going, I think we're safe to say, it's not going to make the pothole get any smaller. It's going to get bigger, isn't it? And we're seeing that all over town.
Yes, yes. And we'll see this happens every year. So as you know, this is the first year that we've had a significant amount of rain.
Right.
The last 2 years, that has not been as we track our service requests throughout the years, we notice that. And we've been able to get our pothole requests taken care of because of that. You know, they have actually dropped down and our storm response requests were really low. But you're right. Once it rains, if there's a beginning of a pothole, it doesn't help. The water will just get in there. And then, of course, the impact of the traffic will help break that up. So once it's dry again, we can go in there, clean that out, make a cleaner edge and patch that pothole. you know.
Where do people call if they have issues about potholes? Do you have like a pothole hotline?
We actually do not. What we do have is we have our main number, which is area code 520-724-6410. But what we do have is the C-Click-Fix app.
What was that again?
C-Click-Fix.
C-Click-and-Fix.
Yes, it's one word, so it's S-E-E-C-L-I-C-K-F-I-X.
And then you can put in your location?
Yeah, so you can do that from your phone, from your computer, from put it down your phone. And you can actually take a picture, and if it has GPS location, it just, when you do the service request, it comes to us with a map location of where we need to go.
Ana Olivares is with us. She is the director of Pima County Transportation. If you have a particular need with your favorite roadway, and this might be a great time, Ana would be delighted to take your call. 790-2040, 790-2040. So when we're looking at the overall condition of our roads and in Pima County, how would you rate that condition right now, Ana?
So actually what we have is a pavement roadway condition that we started a few years ago. We call it PCI, Pavement Condition Index. And it's a, it follows, established method of identifying the condition. It goes from 0 to 100.
So it's a grading system?
It's kind of a grading system.
And this
is
a national thing.
Yes. Yeah. You follow, ASTM, standards to get it together to identify it. Mm-hmm. So we had our roads rated at the beginning of our 10-year program for pavement repair and preservation in unincorporated Pima County. I want to make that clear because Pima County, as you know, we maintain the unincorporated roadways. The jurisdictions are incorporated. They manage their own roads.
In other words, the city of Tucson,
Oro Valley. Oro Valley, Marana.
Right.
And
this is the unincorporated areas of Pima County.
Yes, which is about 1,900 miles of paved, centerline paved roadways that we have.
Whoa, that's a lot.
That is, and that includes all our collector's arterials, which is our main roadways, and all the local roads that we have. So those are our paved roads. Mm-hmm. So we did a rating from 0 to 100, and I remember when I came here about a few years ago, we talked about that at least about 70% of our roads at that time were poor or failed condition.
I recall that from our interview.
And that's when we started talking about we need to have a plan in place to get it together. So I'm happy to say that at the end of this last fiscal year 21, which ended June 30th, we were down to 46%.
Really?
In poor and failed condition. Mm. Yes. So our pavement condition index has gone from a, and I want to make sure I give you the right answer here, has gone from a 44 to a 64 and a scale of 0 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at the end, so that was June 30th when we ended our fiscal year for 21.
64 being the higher it is, the better it
the
is?
The higher it is better, from
that's
0 to 100.
That's an important point.
Yes.
So it's gone up to 64, so
yes,
we're approaching about two-thirds.
Yes,
yeah.
And our goal is to, by 2030, our plan is to have the average pavement condition index of all of our roads to 80, mm-hmm, and that's what we're working towards.
Mm-hmm.
We just started fiscal year 22, which started this July 1st, and this year we have planned $85 million of pavement repair and preservation work. At the end of that, at the end of this fiscal year, which will be next June, we will be up to a pavement condition index of 71. Getting us much closer to the 80 that we're working towards.
And again, this isn't the city, or this isn't Oro Valley or Marana. This is in Pima County.
Yes,
yeah.
in the unincorporated roadways.
Let me ask you that index. How do you judge that? How does that work? How does the grading system work?
So what we did was we contracted a very specialized van that does sensor readings as it drives over the roads, and
really?
It took pictures of everything, and it measures about 19 attributes of rutting, cracking, whether it's alligator, transverse, longitudinal.
There's a camera or something.
There's
that's
a camera
at the
and
the
a sensor,
bottom?
And okay, a laser sensor, okay, that is measuring all these things as it drives across. And it drove our 1,900 miles. And then
it drove all 1,900 miles.
Yes, it did.
Whoa,
it did. So that was a couple of years ago that we got that, because we wanted to get a objective baseline rating for all of our roads. So that way when we mm-hmm. allocate the funding, it's mm-hmm. more an objective way instead mm-hmm. of, you know, we think this is your road, or we get calls, do mine first.
So it measures cracks and...
It measures the cracking, all the types of cracking, the rutting, a little bit of how smooth it looks. It does all that measurement mm-hmm. and puts it in their algorithm. Mm. And then it gives us a rating for each segment of the road. And it does it in segments. You know, it does it in like 1,000 feet, 100 feet segments.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gives us that and does an algorithm, and then it gives us a pavement condition rating for each of those segments.
Wow. So kind of bottom line, so when people are saying, and you hear it all the time, I'm sure, that the roads are, they're horrible and everything, it sounds like just since you were here a couple of years ago, there's been big improvements.
It's been a significant improvement. It's what we said, we've spent... In fiscal year 20 and 21, we spent $94.2 million. That's a huge investment mm-hmm. we have made to improve those roads. And we have noticed the difference. You know, as I said, we were able to catch up with our pothole requests
mm-hmm.
With the assistance of our Transportation Advisory Committee, who for the last few years we've been doing, especially for the local roads, and those are our neighborhood subdivisions, mm-hmm. doing the worst rated road first.
Mm-hmm.
So that has taken, been able to help a lot of those roadways get improved. And that has helped really improve our average PCI and also the number of requests as people are driving on the newer roads. So it's been a huge improvement, and we're going to continue until we get to 80.
Yeah. And when we come back after the break, we'll talk about, the road pavement repair and preservation program in unincorporated Pima County. This is a 10-year program, that has, quite a bit of money involved here. We're talking over $500 million for the 10-year program. So we'll talk about that and some other things with Anna Oliveras, the director of Pima County Transportation, on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff.
It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCare2UAZ.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. Ana Olivares is with us in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios at KVOI on the Buckmaster Show. And Ana is the director of the Transportation Department in Pima County. And one of the reasons I do this show, Ana, is to learn something. And I learned that the roads maybe not as bad in unincorporated Pima County as maybe people are perceiving, that you had this very sophisticated vehicle that went over, let me see, you said how many hundred?
1,900
miles. In other words, took a look at pavement over that entire 1,900 mile stretch, and it came back with a grade that was, again?
So it grades between 0 to 100, 100 being the best,
okay,
and 0 being the worst. So
right.
it gave numbers from all that whole level.
And
then we want to work to an average pavement condition of 80 by 2030.
Okay. And we're at where?
We're
right
at,
now?
Right now we're at 64.
Okay.
64. So, and at the end of this fiscal year, next June, we'll be at 71. And we started with an average about 44 a few years back.
So we are making progress.
Yes.
And then this 10-year program, this road pavement repair and preservation program, tell us a little bit about that.
So as when we was here last
repairing
time.
Repairing pavement.
We are
basically
repairing the pavement. So thank you for clarifying that,
mm-hmm,
Bill, because it's preserving or repairing the pavement of the existing roadways that we have.
Yeah.
And over the 10 years, as you mentioned, it's over $500,000
mm-hmm
to do that. And our program keeps in place repairing it, and then the subsequent treatments that are needed at the 4, 8 year, and then the next year's plans. That is something that we did not focus on in the last 10, 15 years of our road. As we focus with the 97 HERF bond program and the RTA program on expansion of the infrastructure to improve the congestion, the maintenance part of all this was kind of left to the wayside, which is where we are now to having to fix
mm-hmm
as many roads as we need to do.
That's kind of the shift in your business. Your industry now is moving toward, hey, let's repair. So much focus had been on the congested roadways, but now it's moving back to, hey, we've got to fix what we've already put down.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We have to protect that investment.
Yeah.
And of course, it all takes a lot of money, right? It's money to improve the congestion and money to repair. So when there isn't a whole abundance of funding, you have to prioritize. And believe that's what we did with the RTA program and the 97 bond program, was to prioritize the congestion relief. But then this is the end result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're about to spend over $500 million on this program. But as I mentioned earlier, the cities and the state of Arizona is in the same boat, and they're preparing to invest significant amounts of money also to repair the asphalt pavement of the existing roads.
And that will be a real key, and everyone seems to be saying on the same page on this, that the renewal for the Regional Transportation Authority, the 20-year renewal, it's got to have a nice heavy focus on a repair.
Maintaining. Keeping the, you want to protect the investment that you make.
Mm-hmm.
None of this is a small amount of money that we're talking about.
So back in 1997, there was the highway user,
revenue
fund.
Okay. Yes.
Known as the HERF, a bond program in 97. There were about 58 projects that were authorized. That is finally being wrapped up this fiscal year.
Actually, fiscal year 23. Fiscal year 23.
And
yes,
you will have completed pretty much all the projects?
Every project, and not exactly as it was listed on the original ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the history, there were about
58.
There were 58 projects, but there were also amendments done. Mm-hmm. So there are about 18 amendments mm-hmm. done throughout, and it changed some of it. So some of them were no longer needed. Let's say mm-hmm. for like Duval Mine Road was one of the projects, but when ADOT did the I-19 and Duval Interchange, it kind of took care of that. So there were little adjustments made throughout those 97 to now time frame, amendments added. And we added a Project 59 a few years ago because we used some of the bond allocation that was not all used for the changes to do some pavement repair and preservation because of the need, right? We were trying to find as much resources of to use for the pavement repair because it's in such a need. So 16 million of that bond of the 97 HERF bond was used for pavement repair of our arterial roadways. Those are the roads that are used, that are not local roads.
It did take a while, though, didn't it?
It took a while, to say the least.
I mean,
yes.
Was there one particular reason why it took so long, or just a combination of things?
It's pretty much a combination of things. As you know, the $350 million authorization was an estimate of what mm-hmm. somebody thought.
Back in 1997, that was...
Yes.
That was the estimate.
And then as you progress, and then we had some economic recessions, mm-hmm. early 2000s, 2008, mm-hmm. because those bond programs, not only the bonding was not the only money that was going to build those projects. It needed regional money. Mm-hmm. It needed some local money. But when those revenues did not come in regionally or even locally, then we couldn't afford it. And then you sell bonds, you have to pay that debt back. At
right.
the same time, our HERF debt, our HERF money allocation is paying that debt. So when a lot less was coming, you couldn't sell the bonds to pay it back. So everything got stretched out to stretch out as much money, which is where we are today, to finally getting it in fiscal year 23.
Are you using apps to help people kind of avoid congested areas?
Great question, Bill. And we are working towards that.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned to you in our email exchange, mm-hmm. this is a year that we established the Regional Center for Smart Mobility Solutions in our department. And this is a regional center. And there, with the new technology, and then, you know, the pandemic showed this to us as people mm-hmm. work remotely mm-hmm. and that things could be, technology could be used to still get all our work done and maybe not have to drive. And we want the center to take advantage of all this technology to bring what we're looking forward is a platform, a mobility on demand platform, so that we can manage the demand of the traffic by shifting people around, shifting the peak hour traffic maybe, mm-hmm. or shifting people to use all of our road capacity, not just I will admit to this, I'm one of those people that pretty much takes the same way to work every day.
Yeah, most people, I would guess, do that. It's better, though, from what I understand, for your brain to mix it up.
Yes.
You know, every couple of days.
To mix it up.
Change it, take the different route, because then the brain says, hey, what are we doing here? Well, okay.
Yes.
You know, just a little mind game there for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at the same time, if most of us are doing that, there are other roadways that we are not using to its full capacity.
Yeah.
So the platform that we want, that we're working on, is going to be able to tell if you take it down on your phone, tell you on your GPS on your car, it'll guide you to use the best, quickest route to get to your destination. And it'll help you if you leave at a certain time. Maybe if you leave 5 minutes earlier or later, mm-hmm. you'll get there faster. And this way we're managing the demand on our roadways without having to add to our infrastructure. Because as we just talked about, the infrastructure yeah. to maintain is extensive. So we're working towards that. It's like I said, we initiated this year in our budget, but this is a regional center. We need, of course, and it'll be helpful to include all the other jurisdictions that are in Pima County to be part of this. Because you as a traveler, when you travel, you're traveling through unincorporated, through the cities, mm-hmm. through the jurisdictions, can't really tell the difference, you know, where you are. So we need to move the traffic.
Are the traffic lights under your jurisdiction in the county?
If they are in unincorporated Pima County roadways, they are our jurisdiction.
Hmm.
So then the city has their own signals to maintain. Marana maintains their own.
There was all that talk about the Michigan turn.
What
was that called? Is that right?
Indirect left.
Okay.
The indirect left.
Do you have that in the county?
We did one on Ina and Oracle.
Yeah.
So that is one of ours, and there's signals on each side, but it's also Oracle Road is maintained by the state. So
it's kind of controversial, that particular turn, but it's supposed to move traffic in
yes.
a more efficient way, right?
And it does for the heavy movement. It does for the heavy movement. You know, there's less weight for you to make a left turn.
All right. Before we wrap this up, that you mentioned first, if people have some needs about potholes or that One Click Center, give
yes,
us that
it's
again.
Yes, it's the C-Click Fix app.
Okay.
And you download it from the Play Store, put it on your app.
Is there a link there at the Pima County Transportation
There is. It's under
website.
Report a Problem. It's under Report a Problem.
Okay.
We can have that on there. And then our phone number, please, 724-6410. That is our main number for everything. And if you don't have the app, our staff will put it into the system for you.
Ana Oliveras, always a pleasure. Thank you for bringing us up to date. And sounds like we are moving in the right direction as far as the grading for our roads, which is always good to hear. Thank you, Ana.
Thank you very much, Bill. My pleasure.
All right. We're going to come up at the midway point here of the Buckmaster Show. We'll hear from CBS Network News. Then we have our education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks, will be with me in studio as we get an update on this war over masks in schools continues to escalate. We'll talk and get the latest from Dr. Hendricks.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends at Green Things. Green Things has everything you could possibly dream of for your garden. And wouldn't this be a perfect time to do some gardening during the monsoonal break? We have about a 4, maybe 5 day period here where we're not expecting any rain. So this would be the perfect time to put some beautiful color in your garden. Green Things, open daily. They're in their 51st year. The website is a good starting place. It's greenthingsaz.com. And while you're there, stop by Zocalo for all that great merchandise that has been beautifully, in many cases, handcrafted from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Their website is zocalovillage.com. The Buckmaster Show. In the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, but today we are not using the live line. We are all in studio, which is great, and Dr. Robert Hendricks is with me in studio. He is our contributor on education. He knows a lot about that particular field. He's the Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education. He's also former Arizona's top school superintendent. He's vice chair of the Interfaith Community Council, a Tucson-based organization comprised of over 120 faith communities dedicated to helping people in crisis by providing assistance with food, housing, employment, and health care. And did I also mention he's the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, where there is a beautiful elementary school that was named in Dr. Hendricks' honor. So you're very busy, and it's always good to have you in studio. Thank you.
It's always good to be here, Bill.
Well, let me say, what is wrong with this country when we have, it happened in Texas, parents fighting with a school teacher physically because the school teacher was wearing a mask?
I have honestly never seen anything like this in all my years in education. And quite honestly, this is a never-ending story. Every day, there's a new chapter in this tension about masks and also about vaccinations.
It escalates. And you've got the governor now saying he's threatening these school districts that are saying that they are requiring masks. And now there are 8 school districts here in Pima County. I think, let's see, I saw, Tom, you had the story. Sunnyside is the latest to join. So the governor now is retaliating.
He is.
And do we begin with this story? It's like you say, it's changing almost by the hour.
It is. And there are probably over 24 school districts in the state of Arizona that have defied this governor's mandate. And as you said, locally, TUSD and Catalina Foothills led the pack. And now we have AmFi and Flowing Wells and Vail, Sunnyside, soon to be Tanque Verde as well. We're expecting all of those districts to be on board.
Nogales, I think, is also on the list.
Nogales is on the list. Mm-hmm. And the defiance of the governor's order is really an interesting phenomenon. And we see it happening in Florida. We see it happening in Texas as well. Mm-hmm. And the vitriol around this is just unbelievable. And it's like, what can we do? And the three governors, Florida, Texas, and Arizona, seem to be following a similar path. And that is, we're going to retaliate. Mm-hmm. We're going to intimidate. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell these districts that if you don't follow the anti-mask mandate, mm-hmm. we're going to see some kind of retribution.
Which that retribution, at least in Arizona's case, I don't know about Florida. Well, I've heard that in Texas it's actually firing or trying to fire administrators and things like that. But
right.
I was going to say the retribution in Arizona would be actually the threat to withhold COVID funds from school districts, and that gets into an area. Now the federal government is saying, the Biden administration is saying, you can't do that.
Right. There's about $163 million on the table in Arizona in COVID funds.
Right.
And as I said, the governor has said he's going to hold that money back for any districts who defy his order. And as you indicated, the federal government has now stepped in, Secretary of Education, the Office of Civil Rights, and they're saying, hey, wait a minute, you can't do this. There's a real question as to what the intention of those funds were in the first place, and is it really his money
right.
to exercise that kind of discretion?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really going to be a perfect storm. I think it's just going to be really, really complicated.
And there is an item we need to an important point that the districts are moving, these eight local school districts, Southern Arizona, and a couple more statewide, and they're moving in this direction before the state law takes effect the end of September. The legislature passed the law banning the masks in school, but that law doesn't take effect until the end of September.
That's right, and that adds another wrinkle to this whole controversy because
right.
That September date is going to be a moment of reckoning for school districts and the governor.
Yeah, because
and
then
the
what do they do then? What is?
Well, I don't know. I think the districts obviously have strong legal counsel that helps them believe that they're going to be able to move forward to give the legislature a slight benefit of the doubt. You know, this Delta variant was not as strong, was not as much of a problem when they initially approved this legislation at the end of June. It's gotten much worse. We see the data from schools. It's really horrendous. And so, but I don't hear that legislators are backing down from that. You know, this was really an attachment to the budget bill.
Yes, it was.
And so, you know, the end of September is going to be that date of reckoning, and we're not sure what's really going to happen with that. But back to the funding thing, I wanted to mention the federal funding is that, you know, the school districts that are going to be most affected are the schools that have low-income students, because they're going to get a larger percentage of this COVID money.
Like TUSD.
So, like TUSD,
yes.
Who, again, was a leader in standing up against the governor.
And Sunnyside, I would imagine, has
right.
a good chunk
Catalina
of money.
Foothills will not be as directly affected.
No.
However, there will be, you know, there'll be some monies that might be held off the table. But it's really a major push-pull kind of a situation, and the governor is digging in, and I don't see any evidence that he is going to give any inch on this particular situation.
You're wired into the education community. What's your pipeline telling you? You have to wonder and put yourself in the shoes of these superintendents, of which you were one
right.
at a time. Well, you have to ask yourself, and I bet you have, what would you be doing if you were running a school district?
Well, I think about it every day.
I bet.
Because I've never,
it's
never left my bloodstream.
I mean,
so it's there, and
yeah.
It's like, I applaud the districts and the district leadership that has taken the stand, obviously at some risk, and, I believe they're right in doing this, and, I think the evidence is very clear. I mean, I don't think it's irrefutable that masks are really important in any large community environment. And so for the governor or anyone to say That's not necessary. I mean, look at the recent data on school districts that have not required masks. They're falling. They're falling. Every day you see schools being closed, much higher percentage than schools that have required, have mandated the mask.
Mm-hmm.
Now, needless to say, there are some instances there as well, but nothing in the, in the proportion that the unmasked communities have shown.
And where does this put parents? My goodness. And their kids. The kids, all this tension, you've worked around kids and education your whole professional life.
Right.
You want to tell me that this doesn't rub off on the kids?
It does, but it's interesting because I was driving over here today. There was a little clip on CNN. They interviewed a third grader, and she said, I will wear my mask if it means I can be back with my friends. And I'm thinking, you know, the resiliency of children, this is not about whether children will accept masks or not. This is an adult issue. The adults are causing the problem. The kids are caught in between.
Yeah.
And I guess part of what I don't understand is whenever you look at, as I think of a school community as a giant petri dish, it really, it's prone to infection. It's prone to disease. You have kids that...
even if it wasn't COVID, the kids would be spreading the colds right about now
no tomorrow. You know, they're sneezing and they're sniffling and all of those things. It's always harbored those kinds of situations. But here we have a situation where we can control some of that. I've been in schools in the spring. I mentioned this before. I've watched kids pass in the hallways. I've watched them wear their masks in the classroom. I've watched them file through the restrooms. Kids are very resilient. They're very pliable, and they will follow the rules if the rules are laid out for them. But when you lay questions out in front of them, you know, is this really what I'm supposed to do? My parents telling me one thing. My teacher's telling me something else.
That's too bad.
It doesn't make sense.
No, everybody's not on the same page for sure. We'll take the break right here. More with Dr. Robert Hendricks, who is our contributor on education, and he has spent a lifetime in this field. And it is a difficult time to be in the education environment right now. We'll be right back.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail and over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Oh, so much to talk about on the Buckmaster Show. We will continue our discussion with Dr. Robert Hendricks. But first, look at that. 75 degrees. I can handle that over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. And the lows are very pleasant. Upper 50s. So they've been getting a lot of rain over there. And it's very green in Silver City. So this is a perfect time to take the three-hour road trip east of Tucson. And you can start your planning now. I hope you do. It's very simple. Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org for all the information about where to stay. And there's some great places to stay and things to do. I send a lot of my listeners over there and everybody comes back. I had a great time. I had no idea that was such a close by place to kind of get away. Dr. Robert Hendricks is with us. He is our education contributor on the Buckmaster Show, the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. And we were talking, we've devoted most of our time to the mask war that's going on. Do you have any idea what the governor's motivation might be on this, other than the issue of freedom, as far as he sees it? What do you see?
Well, I have my suspicions, Bill. Mm.
Let's hear
don't
your
think,
suspicions.
The governor's record has been one of large support for public education.
Okay.
And you know, just one more glimpse of that is the fact that he has another proposal. And mm-hmm. He's saying, as a parent, if you don't want your child to wear a mask, I'm going to propose that we give you a voucher for $7,000 per child, and you can shop around and find a school of your choice, private, parochial, whatever, that doesn't require a mask.
Mm.
And that money also is going to come out of the COVID fund.
Wow.
And so that hasn't been implemented yet, but that's what he's suggesting, is that
pass the legal muster from the federal government as far as the use of COVID funds for vouchers?
I think that one's pretty clear. I'd like to see that one challenged, and I think you've got all kinds of issues. And we're not talking about charter schools here. Mm-hmm. Charter schools are part of the public school system. We're talking about private schools, private school tuition, and parochial school tuition. And so he would essentially provide funding, you know, for that support of schools.
Let me ask you, there's so much focus on this whole mask issue. We haven't talked about the issue of online learning. I mean, whether or not school districts are going to have to go back to that. I don't think they can afford to go back to that financially, can they?
I think that there's going to be some resistance on the part of school districts to go back that path.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the large school districts, may be able to keep a unit going for...
I think TUSD is doing that, kind of a hybrid program.
And, you know, big cities are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But your smaller independent school districts are not going to be able to do that. And here in Arizona, there's still some question as to whether you would get 100% funding for those students who are in that kind of environment. There's been a penalty in the past. And so I don't think school districts know if that would continue or not. But, you know, to get fractional funding by allowing a student to be online is not an incentive for school districts to continue. One of the things that I keep hearing is parent choice.
Mm-hmm.
Parent choice. And I really support parent choice. I always have as an educator. I think parents, if they can, are entitled to go to any school district that, you know, are within their means.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is a whole different situation when you're using the context of parent choice. Having a parent choose not to wear a mask that impacts or affects other children or other people in the school environment. To me, that's not choice. You know, that's a prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say a selfish one at that, but it's a prerogative. And so I think we get confused when we use parent choice in that same way, because a parent can choose not to send their child to a school, but that's different than choosing not to have their child wear a mask. That's, you know, in a situation where a mask's mandated. And so that, you know, around that, I think, is the notion of the anger and the frustration and the accusations. And, you know, no one's really talked about school boards, which are never a pleasant place to be. you know, it's a terrible job. It's a thankless job. It's
without
one that's in most
any kind of financial remuneration,
unpaid.
Right?
And these
unpaid.
Folks have really been in the eye of the storm, mm-hmm. and I applaud them because they have to. The leader of the school district works for them,
mm-hmm.
so they have to show the courage and the commitment to take this strong stand in a political environment which is not going to be necessarily very popular.
Only a minute to go. Where does this all, this the mask rebellion?
Let's wait
end?
Till tomorrow.
Yeah.
To see one interesting thing I saw was a school district in Texas has said, okay, here's our approach to the mask. We require school uniforms in our district.
Yes.
So we're going to require the mask
as
part of the school uniform.
Mm.
And they actually have created a mask with a little insignia on it. And so they've been able to skirt the governor's order there. We'll see if that happens. But it's going to continue. And
yeah.
I'm going to predict, Bill, when we get together next month,
mm-hmm.
we're still going to be talking about the
same
issue.
I know.
Yep.
We'll see you in about 30 days.
Yep.
Dr. Robert Hendricks, thanks, and stay safe. That will do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Bob Hendricks and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster, and we have coming up next the very popular show about money, your money. It's the Dave Ramsey Show. Talk to you, everybody, tomorrow. Dr. Teresa Cullen goes by Terry. She's head of the Pima County Health Department. Talk about a very timely interview. She will be our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show at 12:04. Have a great afternoon.